Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
How's it, everybody? Welcome to the latest episode of The Command Zone. Today, we have a really cool main topic. We're talking about the new digital version of Magic. It's called MTG Arena, and we've got special guest, the famous cosplayer, Ashlyn Rose. It's going to be a really cool episode. But before we get into that, we have something exciting. We have our M19 preview card. Now, full disclosure, for the first time ever, I am here in the studio alone. Jimmy is abroad. He had a big project come up. We're going to talk about that a little bit more at the end of this episode. Okay, so on to our M19 preview card. It is Arcades the Strategist. Yes, it's one of the Elder Dragons. In fact, at the time of this recording, the other four Elder Dragons, Nicol Bolas, Palladium Wars, Chromium, and Vivictus Asmodi have all been revealed, and we're, I guess, the last one. Arcades the Strategist, who was previously Arcade Sabbath, is back. The card is one green, white, and blue, so four mana total for a 3/5 Flying Vigilance Elder Dragon. And it says, whenever a creature with Defender enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. So anytime you play a creature with Defender or a wall, all the walls have been errated to have Defender, all the old walls, then you draw a card. And Arcades also says, each creature you control with Defender assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power and can attack as though it didn't have Defender. This is kind of opening up, I would say, a new archetype or a new tribe that wasn't available, although that's not technically true, right? I think the obvious comparison here is to Doran, the Siege Tower, and Doran was kind of maybe the go-to card when we were talking about wall decks before, because Doran allowed all creatures to assign combat damage according to their toughness rather than their power. So this is a little bit different for a few reasons. I'll read Doran really quick just because we're doing the direct comparison here. So Doran was also an Abzan card. So Doran costs black, green, and white for an 0/5 legendary creature, a Treefolk Shaman. And it said each creature assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power. So that's the sort of most direct comparison to Arcades, but there's some differences, right? So Doran is Abzan rather than Bant. So you're kind of trading blue for black, which you know I'm going to like because blue. Doran affects all creatures. So Doran makes your opponent's creatures assign their combat damage according to their toughness rather than their power, which didn't tend to matter a lot because, you know, most other good creatures are usually like 2/2s and 3/3s, but every once in a while it does. Arcades, however, has card advantage because every time you play a creature with Defender, you draw a card. And I would imagine that most Arcades decks are going to just have, you know, 90% of their creatures have Defender. Arcades also allows Defenders to attack. So in Doran, people would sometimes build a wall deck, but Doran actually doesn't by himself or herself cause the walls or the Defenders to be able to attack. You would have to get another card that allowed that. And there's a number of cards in history that do that, but Doran didn't automatically. So you sort of required another piece, whereas Arcades automatically just on the card allows, you know, your walls and Defenders to just start attacking. So that's kind of, I think, a big thing. And no other commander really did that. So some people would build like Corona wall decks, just 5-color walls and things like that. But you would still have to go find the piece that'll let the walls attack. But now you don't. So I think this is really opening up a tribe that sort of wasn't really very well supported before, which is exciting. So Doran often had creatures, you know, that was just big butts, as we say, that just had large toughness to power ratio. And, you know, often it was tree folk tribal as well. So I really like Arcades. I think that this is going to open up wall decks, which walls are really cool cards. And there's some fun interactions we've seen in limited environments. My only sort of disappointment, maybe, or the only thing I sort of regret here is that Arcades doesn't have red because you can't play Vent Sentinel. But I understand that the original Arcades Sabbath did not have red. You kind of got to stick to the colors that the card was. And they really did keep the flavor of the original card because Arcades Sabbath from Legends, the original Elder Dragon, I believe you paid one white and you pumped the toughness. And it also said that your untapped creatures that weren't attacking got plus two toughness. So they really did stay in flavor with what the original Arcades Elder Dragon was. So let's talk about some cards that come to mind here when maybe you're building this wall deck or building around Arcades the Strategist. The first one, I think, obviously, is Assault Formation. And Assault Formation has been reprinted, I think, one time. It's one and a green for an enchantment. It says, each creature you control assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power. Arcades already sort of does that, but Arcades only does that for creatures with Defender. So Assault Formation doesn't care if the creature is a Defender or not. But then there's two activated abilities on Assault Formation. It's one green, target creature with Defender can attack this turn as though it didn't have Defender. Again, this kind of doubles up what Arcades is already doing, which is fine because, you know, your commander doesn't always just live. A lot of times people remove it, especially if you had like lethal on the board and they're like, I don't want those walls attacking because that will kill me. I'm going to get rid of Arcades and turn off all your defender's ability to attack. So having a second way to sort of make that happen, and Assault Formation only costs two mana. So, you know, you might be able to drop it where they're not expecting it because it looks like Arcades is going to cost six or eight mana and you don't have that. Assault Formation for two mana, boom, comes down, one green, attack with all my walls. And also Assault Formation has a second activated ability, which is pay two and a green. Creatures you control get +0/+1 until end of turn. So because Arcades and Assault Formation make your creatures assign combat damage equal to their toughness rather than their power, it's basically giving fire breathing to your whole team for two and a green. And again, you can do this multiple times. So if you have 6 mana, 9 mana, 12 mana, you can really pump your entire team to a pretty high level. Another sort of group of cards that comes to mind for me here are the Retribution of the Meek or the Slaughter of the Strong sort of board wipes that only wrath all the big creatures. So Slaughter of the Strong, I'll read. It's one white white. It's a sorcery. Each player chooses any number of creatures he or she controls with total power 4 or less, then sacrifices all other creatures he or she controls. Walls don't have very much power, and because you're assigning your combat damage with their toughness rather than their power, you're probably playing a bunch of like 06s and 04s and 05s. And so your total creatures with power 4 or less might be all of your creatures. Now, Arcades does have 3 power. So there's that. But I think there's a good chance you can save most of your creatures, but everybody else maybe only keeps one if they want to keep, or maybe 0, depending on what their board looks like. Retribution of the Meek, which I mentioned earlier, Fell the Mighty, Dust to Dawn. These are all wraths that could be sort of one-sided wraths in your favor because they're all wraths that are based on the power of creatures. And the power of your creatures is very small, even though they're still hitting very hard because they're hitting based on their toughness. I really like that kind of interaction. Another card that comes to mind immediately is Meek Stone. It's a one-mana artifact, and it says, creatures with power 3 or greater don't untap during their controller's untap steps. This is just perfect in this deck. I doubt you'll even have a creature besides Arcades who has Vigilance that has power 3 or greater. Most walls don't have 3 power or more. They're usually like 06s or maybe like 15s. There might be one or two that have a little bit of power, like there's Wall of Swords and things like that, but because you're assigning combat damage based on toughness, you don't even necessarily want those cards. You want the ones that have really high toughness to power ratio. One of the partner commanders I think would go really well in this deck, it's Sidar Kondo of Jamora. He costs 2 green and white for a 2/5 legendary creature human knight. Has flanking, that doesn't matter, but what he does say is creatures, oh, he's also a partner. That doesn't really matter because he's going to go in your 99. But he says, creatures your opponents control without flying or reach can't block creatures with power 2 or less. So again, because all your walls, their power doesn't change. They just assign combat damage based on their toughness. So if you swing in with an 07 wall, it still has zero power, even though it's going to hit them for 7 damage, which means they can't block that creature unless they have a creature with flying or reach. So I think this card is very powerful because it makes a lot of your walls and defenders unblockable. And then there's a bunch of walls, of course, in this deck, or a bunch of defenders. And some of the cool ones, or the ones I think are going to be required, are, well, for one, you get some sort of specialized ramp. So Axebane Guardian is one that comes to mind. It's 2 and a green for a creature human druid. It's an 0-3 with defender. You can tap it and add X in any combination of colors to your mana pool, where X is the number of creatures with defender you control. So if you got 4 walls, Axebane Guardian taps for 4 mana in any combination of colors. Overgrown Battlement is another one, which taps for green mana according to the number of defenders you have. Another cool wall I think is pretty awesome in this deck is Crenellated Wall. It's 4 mana for an artifact. It's a wall. It's been errated, like most walls have, to say that it has defender. It's an 0-4, I said. You can also tap it, and target creature gets 0-4 until end of turn. So it's kind of an onboard trick, because if you're giving target creature +0/+4, you're actually giving it 4 power. 4 power as well, not technically power, but it's going to assign damage according to its toughness. So if it's an 0-5 and it's attacking and you tap the Crenellated Wall, now it's an 0-9 and it's dealing 9 damage. And it still does get that toughness boost, so it kind of gives +4/+4 in a way, which is a pretty big thing and makes your walls impossible to block. And then the last wall I want to talk about is Shield Sphere. It's 0 mana for an 0-6, but it counts as a wall, so it has defender. And if Shield Sphere is assigned as a blocker, you put a -0/-1 counter on it. Now, in this deck, that's a 0 mana 6-6. That seems kind of nuts. And, I mean, it's kind of like Sarah Ascendant, except for it doesn't have lifelink, obviously, and it doesn't have flying. But it costs 0, and, you know, you're probably not going to, if you don't want to, you don't block with it, so it never gets the -1 counter. And you just use it as 6-6 and smash face really early. And if you drop this on turn 0, I can see you getting in 3 or 4 hits with it before anybody's got the ability to deal with it. Because it's hard to play something that can block a 6-6 before turn 4 or so in Commander. And that's like 24 damage, or, you know, maybe more depending. So this seems crazy to me. I think this would be a really cool deck and pretty unique in that it's not a tribe that's really been fully unlocked until now. I think, ironically, it would be a wall deck, but it would skew aggressive, skew more aggro, because walls usually have a very high toughness to their CMC. So you imagine you're playing kind of a deck that it... I'm just realizing something. I was talking about Shield Sphere. You play it on turn 0, and, like, you could attack on turn 1, but you can't. You have to play Arcades first before... before you can attack with it. And I'm sure a lot of you are screaming at your radios or your screens right now. I apologize. Shield Sphere is still good because still 0 mana 6-6, but you won't be able to swing until Arcades is out. So you can't actually swing until turn 4. I still think that's great because on turn 4, people are unlikely to have something that can block a 6-6. It's not quite as good as I just said. Okay, sorry. Still, I think the deck will skew kind of aggro because once Arcades drops down, I imagine, like, you turn 0 Shield Sphere, turn 2 some other wall, turn 3, you know, Axebane Guardian, play Arcades the Strategist, and now swing with everything. And you could be swinging on turn 4 for somewhere in the realm of 18 to 20 power just because walls just have a lot of toughness. So it feels like it will skew aggro. But because Arcades gives card advantage, remember that first line of text is, whenever a creature with defender enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. That's very powerful in an aggro deck because aggro's, well, one of aggro's problems is that it gets out to a fast start. It starts, you know, smacking people around, getting their life totals low, but it's using all of its gas and it tends to run out. But Arcades actually does provide card advantage. So this actually feels like one of the more viable aggro decks because your commander allows you to replace every card you play. That's a defender or a wall, obviously. But to replace a lot of cards you play, it almost has like half of Zendikar Resurgent on it, you know, not the mana part, but the card draw part, which I think would be very, very powerful. So this seems like a great commander to me. It's also only 4 CMC. Arcades, again, is 1 green, white, blue, 1 in Bant. Very reasonable. A 4 mana 3-5 Flying Vigilance, already good. I really like this card. I think it might be one of the better new Elder Dragons, and I'm personally excited to maybe check out building a wall deck of my own. So that is our M19 preview card. And I guess I've said enough about it. We'll probably talk more about these Elder Dragons in future episodes. And of course, we've got the M19 set review coming up. But for now, we're going to move on to our main topic and the rest of our show, which I will warn you was recorded a few weeks ago, again, because of GP Vegas, which just happened. If you can tell, my voice is maybe sounding a little bit deeper, a little bit more tough and rugged, I hope. It's mostly because I'm super exhausted and a little bit getting sick. Very common, happens after a lot of conventions. GP Vegas was awesome. Again, we'll talk more about that, I'm sure, in the future. But for now, let's head on to the main part of the episode and the main topic.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
It's the final countdown.
Oh my gosh.
I just skipped to the to that part.
I like the
Yeah, I get the drums in there.
It's the final countdown to the beginning of the episode.
Good segue. Wow.
And we made it. Welcome everybody to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai, and today we are joined by our friend, Game Nights alum and Magic the Gathering cosplayer, Ashlyn Rose.
Hello.
Hello. Yes. So you guys may remember, yeah. Game Nights. Who did you cosplay as?
Admiral Beckett Brass.
What a cool cosplay.
That was so much fun.
And you're actually watching this after GP Vegas has already happened, although we're recording it before GP Vegas happened. So can you look into the future, Ashlyn? And we're probably going to have some video and some pictures.
Or the past.
But what, what characters were you portraying at Vegas, or are you going to? It's hard to talk about the future as if it's the past.
I know,
it
right?
Me up. Yeah,
I'm seeing a lot of green and red right now.
Oh,
and some blood maybe. So I think something like Bloodbraid Elf.
Bloodbraid Elf. I've been following you on Twitter. I'm seeing the that costume looks very involved.
Oh, I'm so excited for it. Yeah, it's taken a lot of work, but it's one of the ones I've spent the most time on at this point, and I'm really excited to showcase it at Vegas as its first.
You were excited to have already showcased it, and it was
it looked a
terrific success.
It looked awesome.
Nothing fell apart and nothing went wrong.
Now, I have a question. So at events like GP Vegas, do you always have like a new, you know, outfit that you're going to debut, or is this like how many times? Well, tell me how that whole process works, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So sometimes there's new outfits. Sometimes it's just whatever I have available with the time that I have. So it depends really on like how much time we have to build a costume and like if there's a new card I'm really excited about cosplaying.
Right.
So how did you pick Bloodbraid Elf?
Since I like started playing Magic, when I saw that art, like I fell in love with it immediately. It's been on like my Facebook page as like a to-do list forever.
Oh, nice.
So when they unbanned it for Modern, I was like, it's happening.
Now's the time.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, it looked awesome.
Yes. Thank you.
It was great.
I'm sure you played many a fun game of Magic. Are you going to play? Did you play in any of the events? Oh, it's so weird.
I did a lot of spell slinging.
Excellent. Oh, there you go. A lot of spell slinging. Nice and generic term for playing Magic.
Well, talking about playing Magic, today we are going to be discussing Magic the Gathering Arena. Mm-hmm. So that's the new digital offering. It's right now in closed beta, but Wizards is... they've got a new game, basically. It's Hearthstone, but for Magic.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it.
Yeah, we've all had a chance to play it, so we're going to be going in-depth. It's not going to be a totally Commander-centric episode, right? We're not going to talk about the Commander format specifically, but since you all out there are Magic players, and this, I think, is really a game changer as far as like how everybody's going to consume Magic.
Yeah.
It really is kind of an amazing thing. So we wanted to talk about our experiences with it, you know, what we like, what we don't like, what our hopes and dreams for the future are, things like that. But first, we need to talk about our sponsors. CardKingdom.com/CommandZone. If you use that affiliate link when you purchase your Magic singles, your product, anything at all, you really are supporting the Command Zone podcast. You're supporting Game Nights. You're keeping all of our content on the air. We super appreciate people that use that affiliate link and show their support.
That's right. And getting out of the digital world that we're going to talk about today into the physical one, our second sponsor is Ultra Pro. They make playmats, sleeves, deck boxes, all the accessories that you need, dice as well as dice boxes. We use a dice box on Game Nights every episode, and it's my favorite accessory
thing I've ever done. Sweet wooden one with the dragon?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
And the awesome relic tokens as well, which are an incredible accessory for your gameplay. And Josh is like scrambling to get this Xbox out. But yeah, this thing is awesome.
Ooh. The Dragon deck box. Oh, it opens like that.
That was meant to happen.
Oh, wow. That is sick.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Ultra Pro, another sponsor of the show. If you're ever at an LGS or even, you know, at a GP, you can buy Ultra Pro products from a lot of vendors out there, just supporting the show as well through that continued support.
And the final way is to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to
Ben Bingham.
Ben, you rock.
Bing. It's been a while.
It's Bing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. Well, let's jump right into it. Like we said, Magic the Gathering Arena it's basically Hearthstone, but for Magic in the best way that you can mean that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of different digital card games have come out recently. We've had Gwent, we've had Eternal, Legend. Yeah, they all look, I mean, Hearthstone sort of set the color and look palette, I think, for how these games function, how the cards function on the battlefield. And, you know, as it goes, when Magic first came out, there were 1,000 different card games that came out in its wake, very similar to Magic. And now Magic is sort of taking its notes from the Hearthstone world, from the other digital card games, and changing it into what is going to be, I believe, now the premier, official, one and only main version of Magic the Gathering that most people will be introduced to that is not MTGO, which I think is, you know, for the kids that want to play Vintage, Legacy, some of the older formats, Modern. MTG Arena is focused on the newer player. It's focused on Standard. And soon, we might see some other formats popping in there as well.
Ashlyn, have you had a chance to try out the closed beta very much? I mean, what's your overall impression of, you know, the gameplay, how it looks, how it plays?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I've been playing the closed beta a lot. I was in the big event they had to show off Dominaria when that released.
Oh, cool.
I've been streaming it on my Twitch channel when I have some time. And I like it a lot. It feels really, really good compared to MTGO. It's just
I mean, that's the elephant in the room, right? Let's get this out of the way now, right? Because Magic Online, which a lot of people call Modo or MTGO, was the sort of previous incarnation of Magic in the digital space, and
it's a giant,
it served its purpose.
Yes,
but it's bad, right?
It's a giant behemoth program that's been lunking around
since the early 2000s.
Yeah, it's got every single, I mean, like, the number of bugs that this thing has had to deal with, because it's dealing with the entire card base of Magic. You can play four-player Commander on there. You know, like, there's a lot you can do with this program, but it's a bit awkward and it is not user-friendly in the least bit. The number of misclicks I made when I first started playing are awful. Things that you would never, ever do in real life.
And it's clunky, too. It's not smooth. It looks bad. Like, it just doesn't look like a modern video game. And it's expensive.
Yes.
Like, Magic Online, a draft on Magic Online costs like 14 real world dollars for one draft. It's like the same as in paper, which is crazy.
Well, considering the cards are worth way less and you can't redeem them for the most part in a real life version as well. Yeah. So it's you know, it's not.
Oh yeah, MTGO does have redemption, set redemption. So they did this weird thing where they decided, like, if you collect a full set of digital cards on Magic Online, MTGO, you can, for a certain time window, turn in those cards, pay a fee, and then receive in the mail in the real world a physical set of the cards. So there was this weird tie between the digital world and the real world. It would affect pricing of cards and things like that. It also made it so that it was hard for them to sort of lower the prices on Magic Online because they would be affecting the price of the cardboard cards.
From what I understand, not many people did it, but it did have small effect.
There were businesses that did it, right? So an individual person was unlikely to do it, but there were people that would just order hundreds of these because they could collect the cards at a profit, turn it around, sell the sets or the individual cards.
And it's a lot of work.
Yeah. But it would literally affect the market. And that, I think, was to the detriment of Magic Online because it kept the prices like super high for a long time. And Arena is not going to have any of that at all. Right. In fact, you can't even trade the cards in Arena. It's very like Hearthstone if you've played it, where cards you open and cards you have in your collection, you can't really... I mean, there's no way for me to give a card to Ashlyn or Jimmy. Like,
Yeah, no trading and all that. It is very similar to Hearthstone in that way. But as a result, we have a much more slick redesign over MTGO. Now, both, I believe, are still going to exist at the same time because you can't play Legacy or Vintage on Arena. And I don't want to either, to be honest. Well, I mean, it's like you're doing things that... If you watch MTG Arena clips, cards are flashing on the battlefield. They're, you know, doing effects. They're doing cool things. In Legacy, you're doing such like very specific, crazy or Vintage, even crazier things that you it doesn't work with what MTG Arena is trying to do, which is make Magic fun to play. And if you are very in, like, deep into Magic, then yeah, go to Modo and play the formats for way cheaper there, those really old ones. But MTG Arena is definitely focused on Standard and the current sets, and I believe Brawl soon as well.
Mm-hmm. And looking like a modern video game. Like,
yeah, most importantly.
Like, it has, like, sound effects and, like,
music, the
cool graphics. Sometimes if you play like Glorybringer, a dragon pops out and blows fire all over the whole battle.
Yeah.
By the way, I never play Glorybringer. They always played against me and killed me. Yeah.
So you've seen the fire. Yes. Yeah. But the maps are animated and stuff. So, I mean, it wants to feel and look like a modern video game. And I think it's done a very good job so far. I played the beta. I was part of the announcement. And everything that I've seen so far, I've been like, great. This looks awesome. This works. I haven't run into any issues that are game-breaking at all for me so far.
No. Yeah. What? So when you log on to Arena, Ashlyn, how do you usually play it? Like, what are you doing?
I normally play a lot of the, I think it's Raked Constructed right now, with the pre-built. Well, I start with the pre-built deck, which is actually pretty nice. Like, the decks that you start out with when you first jump into the game, they're great for anyone.
You have like 10 or something of pre-built.
Each two-color pairing. Yeah, two-color pairing. So there's like a pirate deck and a dinosaur deck. And, those cards aren't necessarily in your collection, right? But you can play them out of the pre-built deck.
I think they are part of your collection. That might be for the beta.
Yeah.
For the beta, yeah. It definitely, I mean, the reason that the beta is nice is that you go in and it gives you options. Like, hey, you can start playing immediately. Now, if you want to do ranked and stuff, we'll talk about that in a little bit, how you get cards and how you really open those up and how that system works. It's different than boosters in a lot of ways. But the pre-built decks are great. Mm-hmm. I was sitting around just jamming random games with them yesterday, and they're all pretty balanced against each other as well. If you're not playing Ranked Constructed, you're just sort of playing people around. Like, people are just trying out for the first time, too. So it works.
I mean, that's what Ranked Constructed is, right? It's just play, and it'll just try and find somebody around your level?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. What's your favorite of the pre-built decks?
Oh, man. I like the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Dude, me dinosaurs. Too.
Because you get to play within range.
Yeah.
If you get a turn two, the guy
that... Master? Yeah.
Yeah.
That gives haste?
Then, taps to give haste and makes them cost one less, like... If you ever get that on turn two and they don't kill it, you're just going to win.
The dinosaurs. Although I will say, every time I've played red-green dinos, I get paired against blue-black control.
Ooh.
Every time.
Rough.
Who's playing? Just, like, kill everything you
yeah,
play.
Yeah, it's like, nope.
Counter it.
Nope.
Who's playing control anyway?
I feel like I just run into that approach to the Second Sun decks, like, constantly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is like, turn five. Okay, I'm conceding. I can never win this now. It's great, though, because it's fast, right? Like,
yes, very fast.
Like, Magic Online and Magic in real life. Like, it's hard to be like, I start this game 4 or 5 turns in. You know what? This is not going well. I'm just going to concede, go on to the next game. No big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just like Hearthstone, where you're like, okay, this matchup, this game can literally be over in 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I think is really cool. Well, let's talk about right now, because it's beta, you can sort of play on the ranked construction, which is just like a ladder system, kind of, or ELO. Like, you kind of go from bronze to silver to gold.
Yeah, you get a little ranking every time you win, you lose a little when you lose.
Yeah, and you can build your own pre-built decks from cards. You can win packs, buy packs, and build from your card pool. It feels a lot like Limited in the early rankings.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get higher up, you start running into people who have got a lot more cards or bought cards, and we'll talk about how to do that in a little bit, and they're real decks, and then you either buy a real deck or you lose a bunch.
They are very real decks. We're talking Standard playable decks at a certain point.
And then there's a constructed tournament. It's called Quick Constructed, and that's like a kind of like a league on Magic Online, or kind of like an FNM, kind of, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where, like, play certain matches, there are prizes to be won.
Yeah.
Yeah, you show up with your deck, and then you either you play until you've either got 7 wins or 3 losses, whichever happens first. And based on how many wins you got before you got 3 losses, you kind of get prizes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the prizes are like a certain amount of gold and then cards. There's card rewards too for Quick Construct. Have you done any of the Quick Constructed yet?
I'm too scared.
I don't want to take a pre-build into there,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, I know for a fact I'll just get stomped on and be like, I just spent a little bit of this in-game money for nothing.
Did you have you used like any of your cards to build a deck that wasn't the pre-builds?
Yeah, we've made like a green-white cat deck.
Nice.
Yeah, kitties are fun. Also, we don't have Kaladesh yet, but I've been doing the blue-white auras, which is a lot of fun to play.
Right. So by the time you're hearing this, Kaladesh will have come out, and they'll have done the whole thing, and we'll talk about that. But at this point, we don't have Kaladesh yet or Aether Revolt, and not the full standard. So they don't even have the standard ban list yet, but they will by the time you're hearing this.
Future.
Yeah, so Quick Constructed is a weird name for it. I thought, like...
I thought that was the original quick play. Yeah. I was like, wait, why are they asking for an entry fee and why are these all these other things? It's like, but it is quick, right? That's the reason that leagues, I think, really changed Modo for the better is that
they should just call it mini tournament or something, right? Like, yeah, just so I know what it is. Because I didn't even click on it for a long time because I was like, oh. And then I was like, oh, that's the, oh, I know what that is. Yeah. Okay.
Let's talk about draft though, Josh, because this is something that you've been able to do. They've been opening up certain things on the weekends to sort of stress test some of the features, and drafting is one of them, and it's a bit different than real life drafting right now, but from what you told me about it, it seems like it's a huge improvement for what you want to be doing, at least with your time constraints.
Yeah, so on Magic Online, the only thing I ever did on Magic Online was play drafts or sealed. Mm-hmm. I only played limited. I never built a single constructed deck on Magic Online. I never did like a modern tournament or anything. It was just too hard to gather all the cards, build that deck, learn to play it. It's a lot easier like, hey, I just need to learn this limited environment, play it.
Draft.
Yeah, and it was a good practice too because we used to draft. So I'd be like, before we're drafting, I'm going to draft online a couple times so that I'm like, I got inside information. So that was something I was really excited about for Arena. And right now, they only have drafting against AI, which... Yeah.
But playing against real opponents.
Right, yes. So that's confusing, right? So during the draft portion, when you're opening the packs and picking the cards, you are against artificial intelligence in that draft pod. But then once you've drafted all your cards and built your deck, you play against opponents with that deck, against real-life people. So I was super skeptical about that because it sounds like...
Yeah, you're drafting with computers. And so,
either all the decks are going to be broken and the AI is going to be horrible, or all the decks are going to be not good because the AI is going to like do weird stuff and I won't be able to read signals or whatever. And it was totally fine. It was, you could barely tell. I mean, I think there's certain strategies that people have found out, like the AI doesn't like certain cards, and so we can skew towards certain decks. But
interesting.
But only, you know, it's in the margins. It's not like a huge.
That's why they're stress testing it too to see these things happen.
But it made it super fast, and you can even just pause or quit in the middle of the draft and come back and pick it up from that point, which you cannot do, right? If I'm drafting against real people, I'm in it for the entirety of that draft. Because, like, how do you, middle of pack two, I'm like, uh-oh, you know.
I got to go.
Hold on, guys.
Take my dog to the dentist.
Yeah, my dog. Yeah, exactly. Or I have to go to the bathroom. Or, oh, I forgot. I got a phone call I got to take or whatever. Yeah. I can't. That's it. I'm just going to lose that entire draft. But if you're drafting against AI, you're just like, oh, I'll come back to it later. You come back and it's the same pack what you were on and you just pick it up. So that part of it was really awesome. And then the gameplay is just great. And you're just playing with your deck that you drafted.
Yeah. Let's talk about that for a little bit. Ashlyn, how have you felt? Because the game does a lot of automatic stuff for you. There's also a full control mode that you can enter into. How often are you just playing and letting the game choose what mana to tap, what cards to do, and how often are you like, I need to do this so I don't mess it up?
I think it really depends on the deck you're playing. Mm-hmm. Because certain decks, like, you have to be very mana specific. Like, four color decks I've noticed a lot with, like, you want to be in more control of that.
Right.
But more often than that, with like the pre-built decks, it's pretty safe to like let it tap your mana for you when you want it to. Full control I don't really use. Like, when it shifts from phase to phase, I let it handle all of that and like put a stop where I need it, which is really nice. Like, I don't have to worry about putting F6 down or F2, and it's really smooth.
Yeah, there's little buttons along the bottom, and you can sort of say it just for the next turn, I want to stop at this point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like the upkeep's the one you kind of use the most, where you're like, well, upkeep matters next turn, so I'm just going to click that, and then next turn it'll stop in the upkeep and allow me to do something. But most of the time it just skips that because I don't have anything to do. Yeah. The mana tapping needs some work.
Yes.
I do agree.
Pretty stupid.
And it's also going like this, which is a little tilting to me because I look at it and I'm like, that's not tapped.
It doesn't full tap, yeah.
It doesn't full tap. I mean, it like fades out the color a little bit, yeah, but it is a little tough to choose the mana right now. That's one thing that I found a little bothersome.
It'll be interesting. Do you think that the mana tapping will... Because I think one of the big things this is going to do is introduce new players to Magic. Like, this is the new go-to, right? If somebody's like, I'm interested in Magic, once it's out officially, I'll be like, play Magic Arena, because it's going to be way better to teach you. And we know they're going to create a new player experience and some stuff. They've talked about that. But I wonder if that's going to cause... We're going to see, like, in 3 years, will most people be tapping, like, that 45-degree tap? Because that's what it is in the game. Like,
yeah, it's true.
I mean...
Don't, by the way. A judge is going to come up and be like, excuse you, it doesn't look like they're tapped enough. Your opponent can't tell.
Yeah. Okay, but going back to the auto-tapping thing, it's super hit and miss. I think I was playing the other night where, like, I was casting something and, you know, you get into the rhythm of, like... Because it's like Hearthstone. You just take the card, you drag it out over the battlefield, let it go, and it'll just play it and tap the mana for you. And it's you know, it's usually decent at the Tapping Mana, and I had like an Essence Scatter in my hand, and for whatever reason, my stupid AI decided to not leave a blue untapped, so I had like a two mountains untapped.
Oops.
Rather than a mountain and an island.
Yeah. That yeah. happened to me yeah. where I had a land that could only tap four dinosaurs,
uh-huh.
and I had a lightning strike in my hand. So I played a 3-mana dinosaur, and I was left with a 5-colored dino land and a colorless
land. So you
land.
Can't play the
lightning. And I was like, I can't even play my lightning strike because I can only cast dinosaur spells with it. So I was like, Peter, no. But there is a full control mode. You hit control, literally, yep. and then it enters you into a mode where you get to make all the decisions yourself. Yeah. So that means you can react to things being cast when they enter the battlefield. You get to get all of the triggers that you normally... Well, not triggers, all of the times that you can react and have priority
yes.
that you would in a normal game.
And you can also, like, what I've started to do is leave the auto-tapping on because it's a little too unwieldy to not have it. But mm-hmm. then on the spells where I'm worried about it, you can click the mana manually before you cast it and then yeah. drag it out, and it'll use mana you've already used. Also, if you take the card and you sort of hold it out over the battlefield, it'll highlight which lands it's going
right.
to tap.
Right.
And you can look and be like, well, nope, don't want to do that. And,
yeah.
And then do it yourself. But sometimes you put it over and you're like, yes, yeah, those are the lands. It's fine. And then drop it.
Yeah. The only thing I worry about is that it will not teach people to tap correctly.
Mm.
Because there are a lot of people who just automate it every single time.
That's a really good point.
And I think that's a really important skill, is knowing how to, you know, sequence how you're using your mana as well. But then again, this is an introductory way to get into Magic. I think the people that really want to get better at it will have to learn that. That'll be part of the learning curve for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be some hurdles no matter what going from digital to paper. So, so here's a question I wrote down, which is, do you think, first of all, we don't know if they're ever going to include it, mm-hmm. but do you think that this, the digital setup, the way that the game is designed right now, will even work for Commander? You know, we got a lot of Commander players out there, so I figure it's relevant.
Ashley, I think you have the most hours in this game. Do you think something as complex as Commander? I mean, what's the most complex board state you've had in?
Oh, man.
Because I've seen some where, like, you know, there are 50
infinite
attackers
tokens or whatever.
Yeah. Infinite tokens, yeah. And it gets really sloppy, really crazy because there's all these little lines going everywhere where everything's blocking. But
I don't know if I could see that happening. I mean, probably not. I can't see, like, multiplayer.
Right.
I have a hard time envisioning how that would work out.
I don't even know if it could, given the screen size.
Yeah.
And what real
it feels like it's not set up for, like, more than two players, basically.
Yeah.
Exactly. But complicated board states, like, the most complicated I've had is with, like, a bunch of Sapperlings out or, like, a bunch of tokens. And it gets pretty unwieldy after a while. It's mm-hmm. hard to read the cards because they get really small and turn less.
Yeah. Like, Hearthstone has a natural thing where, like, you can only just fit. The game just is designed where, like,
10 things max or whatever.
Yeah, 10 things. But Magic isn't designed that way. And so once you start getting into, like, infinite tokens or something, the game's not great at figuring out what to do. And yeah, they can be teeny, 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 tiny, like, super tiny to the point where, like, you're having trouble clicking on the ones you want.
Yeah.
I mean, in those cases, you're usually not too frustrated because you have infinite tokens,
yeah,
so you're
true.
Winning that game.
Probably going well.
One of the problems, though, and why Modo actually does this better is that it's able to stack cards really cleanly because it's 2D. In this game, you're on a perspective. There's a lot more weight and heft to everything, and sometimes cards are floating because they're flying, mm-hmm. so it just makes it a lot harder, I think, to like organize that space in a clear and concise way once you get it to be really overcrowded. Most games, though, I don't think we'll get there.
We know they're going to have Brawl on... I mean, they've said it, and I think they're implementing, by the time you've seen this, they may have implemented Singleton. They don't call it Highlander, they call it Singleton, mm-hmm. but Highlander for Brawl, like decks that, like some kind of format that only allows one mm-hmm. of any given card besides basic lands. So that'll be interesting to see if they do try and make it work in multiplayer. Yeah. I really can't see that being working with the setup they've got, with the layout.
They would have to change it to a top-down. Because right now it's like you're kind of at a thing and you're looking at an opponent.
Or almost. They could give you some sort of camera that you can control. So you could...
Whoa.
You could, but it's 3D, right? So you could...
Right.
Not that you can control exactly, but maybe like multiple
look
camera
at
positions. Your
guys' hands, yeah.
You know, like old 3D Mario games, you couldn't really control the camera, but you could set it in one of like three or four different positions.
Right, I see what you mean, yeah.
So maybe there's an overhead, there's each player's, and then the normal, like, your board state. So you can look at everybody's board state. I don't know. That seems crazy. They're not going to do that.
It seems very tough.
Yeah.
Especially like attacking different people as well. How do you signify that? You know, there's a lot that goes into multiplayer that is very intense. I Brawl, they said, is great as a 1v1 format. So I could see that being their singleton format. It makes sense for me, that at least in that world.
Okay, so the next question I wrote down is, will this be good for Magic as a whole? Yes. Like, how is Arena going? Will it be good, and will Like, how do you think it's going to affect the game of Magic?
I think it's actually a really great step in the right direction. I personally, when I first got into Magic, I started with duels on Xbox. Mm-hmm. So that was my introduction to Magic. So to have something new and revamped that anyone has access to and is super easy to pick up, play, learn about the cards, I think it's great all around.
I mean, it feels like a game changer to me for Magic. Like, this is going to make it accessible to a lot of people that it just wasn't before.
And it bears the familiarity of what Hearthstone has created in the marketplace. People see it and they go, oh, I understand how this works. The cards come down, they do a flashy thing, they make a sound effect, and they attack, and they're doing damage. Okay, cool, I can get into this. For me, it's a lot of, is it too little, too late?
Yeah.
Because, Hearthstone has been out for quite a while. It's sort of done the thing where it dominates the market space. But Magic is a game that a lot of people, I'm so surprised every time I talk to someone, I tell them I have a Magic podcast. They go, oh my gosh, I used to play Magic all the time. Yeah. And that happens, I'd say, like 8 times out of 10 sometimes with people I talk to. So if this is a way to get those people back into the game, then great.
I think it's going to bring in a lot of new players too. Because if you think about the barrier to entry to play Magic right now, it is incredible that the game is as successful as it is. Because first of all, how do you play it?
Gotta go to a store.
Well, then.
You gotta go to a store. Yeah. So first of all, you gotta buy the thing. Then you gotta find someone else that knows how to play.
Yeah. And hopefully is playing at your level as well. Otherwise, you're just gonna be discouraged, honestly.
Mm-hmm. And it's hopefully like kind of a good teacher because it's a complicated game.
Yep.
Okay,
yeah.
Those steps are gone. The game will teach you how to play. They're gonna work through that, I'm sure. And it'll be, you know, tested and tested until it's pretty good at teaching how to play. You don't have to figure out, you have to go anywhere to buy the cards or whatever. And you don't have to find an opponent or somebody to play against.
Yeah.
Right.
That's all provided for you. You can't do that now because no one in their right mind is going to be like, oh, you're interested in Magic? Go check out Magic Online. That'll help you. That'll
oh just make gosh.
You. Yeah. Can you imagine?
Oh, my gosh.
Not only do you have to learn the mechanics, but here's how you do the hotkeys, by the way.
Yeah. You also have to learn how this type of video game worked 15 years ago.
Yeah. And if you misclick, there's literally no undo button.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, if you want to do anything, it's at least $50 just to try it.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, whereas this is going to be free to play to try it. I think it's a huge game changer as far as the amount of people it's going to sort of open their eyes to the game. And I agree that Hearthstone has sort of, it's a saturated market now, right? You listed all those games, there's Hex, there's a whole bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the one thing Magic has going for it is that it has stood the test of time as far as like, we know that game is good. Like, it's one of the great games of any kind like ever created. So I think it's really, in that circumstance, it's just a question of how many people can it sort of be exposed to that will have a chance to, like, because there's got to be a ton of people in the world that would love Magic. Mm-hmm. They just haven't, it hasn't been presented to them in a way that they've been able to try it.
Right.
Right.
So, yeah, I think this is, I think this is huge.
Yeah. What do you so what about Duels of the Planeswalkers brought you in originally? Did you like the program a lot? Was it something, or was it just like, because it's there and I can play it, it's just what I'm going to use?
No, I like using the program. I thought it was really easy to pick up and learn how to, like, learning Magic to me was really easy compared to what I've heard from other people sometimes.
Right.
And, because of duels?
Yeah, because of duels. And it was just easy to play, and you didn't have to wait for an opponent. You just played against the AI. You went down the little storyline and built your deck as you got cards. So it was really easy.
Yeah, and we heard last episode, Kessler and I got in a little bit of a debate about exactly how much of it. But, there's no way to deny that duels was a big reason, a big piece of the puzzle as to why Magic sort of blossomed and exploded when it did during that time period. Yeah. And I think this can have a similar effect right now, probably even to a higher extent.
Yeah, because how many people have I talked to also that have said, oh, I want to try Magic, but I, you know.
People that watch game nights. We get messages from them all the time. This looks really fun. I don't even not even into Magic, but I don't know anybody that plays. So how do I?
Yeah.
And, you know, we can say things like, you should go to an LGS and meet people, but how daunting is that?
So daunting.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm going to walk into a place I've never been, and what am I going to do? Just talk to a random person?
I'm an extrovert. Yeah. I wouldn't even want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, think of someone that even just is like, no, I don't want to go into a public space I've never been to. I'm not going to spend cards. What if there's so many stories of people getting scammed at the trades and stuff. Like, there's so much that could go wrong.
And think about all the people you know and are friends with in your life. How many of them have you made a concentrated effort of like, I'm going to make a friend right now? That's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you're doing when you're trying to like find an opponent when you don't know anybody that plays. So this will, all that just gone. Here's a question. Is this going to sort of be the eventual death of the cardboard game, though?
It might be I'm wondering if it's going to affect Standard mostly. Because I think if you the people that love Commander, the people love playing multiplayer, you can't replicate that experience anywhere else. People that play Commander on Modo even are like, this is not even close to as good as
Legacy. Because the social interaction can't be. Yeah.
And like Legacy and Vintage, those cards have already been around and they're already kind of dying, right? Am I wrong in saying that?
No, I think it's pretty well documented that Legacy itself is kind of like just dying a slow death, and that like not very many people can even afford to play it.
Yeah, it's really hard to get into. I think this might be the death of the climb of how many people enter Standard, because a lot of people are going to.
But how many people play Paper Magic then? Because that's, I mean, most of Paper Magic, right?
Yeah, but I think a lot of those. I mean, like I think it's the new players coming in. I think for the most part, if you start in Arena, you're not going to make the transition to cardboard necessarily. But I could see people doing the other way around.
What do you think about, Ashlyn? Do you think this is going to have an effect on the cardboard version of Magic?
Yeah, I think so. I personally have played a lot more Arena since it's come out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I've been finding myself going, like, I go to pre-releases now when I have the time and everything, but I've been playing a lot more Arena just because it's more accessible. And, I mean, accessibility is key right now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like, I only do really make it out to pre-releases at LGSs now. It's just a lot of work. A lot of work, man.
I've even missed like the last three pre-releases because, you know, we've just been so busy with game nights. That's always the weekend before game nights releases,
right.
So I can never go to a pre-release. So yeah, I played in the preview event for Battle Bond, which is really fun, and that's the first time I've played a live game of Magic outside of our playgroup, right? We luckily work at a Magic content place, so we can play games here, which we do. And we'll have people come over to, you know, from our playgroup. But as far as like going out in the world with strangers and playing Magic, I haven't done it since one time, maybe in the last 6 months.
Whoa.
Because, A, it's hard.
Yeah.
And Magic Arena is just so much easier. But I think people are worried about that aspect, and they love the cardboard game, and they're like, there's a part of you that's like, you don't, it's sad, right? That it's kind of, but it's inevitable. And if Magic doesn't do this, something else, Hearthstone or whatever, is eventually going to push so much into the space that it'll still kill cardboard Magic, right? I feel like the world's not going to be set up in a way in 10 to 15 years that playing an analog game in the physical world is really going to be, like, at some point, aren't we just all plugging into the Matrix?
At a certain point. But there is, I mean, like, outside of just Magic, there's been a crazy resurgence in just board games.
Yeah. True,
if you look
that's
at
true.
Kickstarter, if you look at all the, like, different companies that are now just very successful only making board games, because people, I think, our age, again, like, having grown up playing them and then now having expendable income are like, I want to go back to this thing that I really liked. So I think there's going to be a crowd for it always, but Magic is just a weird zone.
But it's niche, right? Like that.
Yeah, it's niche.
Yeah.
But Magic's in a weird place. I don't know.
Do you think that it could go to where competitively it's online and then more social friendly play stays in cardboard?
Oh, man, I don't know, because the GPs and stuff still have great attendance. You know, a lot of people are watching it now. The Pro Tour, last Pro Tour had like 33,000 people watching on Twitch, which is big. Those are big numbers.
I think
that's
low, though. I think they've been in the 40s before. I think they were down
a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's weird. I feel like competitive is always going to still be a face-to-face game. I think casual, if anything, is going to be on Arena.
That's interesting. I would think competitive would be very well suited to Arena, because think of all the things it does for you. Cheating's way harder.
True.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, judging and stuff, way easier. Mm-hmm. The game does most of that for you, maybe all. Also, pairings, things like shuffling, downtime. Also, if I'm watching a game on Arena, like, I can probably, it's not going to be too hard to set it up so I can like mouse over the cards and look at the ones I don't know, so they don't have to worry about all the stuff that they have to worry about now.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like Hearthstone tournaments and streamers, that's part of the reason why their numbers are astronomically higher than Magic.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Because Modo is so awful much easier to watch. Yeah. Well, and physical Magic is awful to watch.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
So, you know, I think that, I think we're going to move towards more like Hearthstone is, where Pro Tours and things will be played digitally. It just solves so many issues that they've got. And maybe you have the players still sitting across from each other, because that's the part you lose. And that's why Commander doesn't work, which is the social, the nonverbal interaction, the thrill of victory.
They lock them in their own rooms. So they can't even talk to each other.
But
so
you still want thrill of victory, agony of defeat. That's just a huge, it's like, it's part of being a person, is like reacting to the emotions of somebody else. And part of the draw of watching those things, honestly, is like the celebration when you win, or the heartbreak when people lose. So, that's why reporters are always sticking microphones in athletes' faces either after they've won or lost, and going like, how did this feel?
Or what did you think? Yeah.
Yeah, because that's really the draw, right? It's not like recount, you know, what happened. It's like, how did it feel when it happened? It's interesting. We'll have to see what happens.
I would much rather watch Arena online.
Yeah.
And because I watch a lot of Twitch from my phone, it is impossible to watch.
So small.
On your phone if it's paper, even in Moto, because you're just like, if you even have like...
Even if you know every card, and we do set reviews for them,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you're still like, what is that?
And one of the other big things with the paper version is it's so hard to see people's hands and what they have in it when you're trying to watch it competitively.
Well, you see them at the Pro Tour with their iPads being like, please just hold your hand up, and they're like, oh, got it, okay, got this.
Even then, it's like this little text if you're watching it on your phone. Yeah. It's just like... And you have to know what it does because it just tells you casting cost and name, and you're like, wait, is that the 2 mana 2/3 or is that the 3 mana 3/2? I don't know. Yeah.
It's tough.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, so that's sort of the gameplay discussion. Now we're going to move on, and we're going to talk about the game economy. Oh, yeah, we have a traditional.
Oh.
Oh, man.
Nailed it.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about the economy in Magic Arena. This is kind of the big, most controversial part about it, and one of the parts that's still in flux. They're still sort of messing with it. But
that's why it's in beta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they've got a system right now that's not that different than Hearthstone, honestly, or any of these games. They have two types of currency, gems and gold.
Yep.
They're trying on purpose to sort of keep a way that you can sort of tell what costs real money dollars and what you can get through like player rewards and free-to-play systems. So the gems are purchased, you know, using your credit card or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the gold is stuff that you can either... Mostly you just win it as rewards for like quests. So there's daily quests, just like Hearthstone, and it'll say, mm-hmm. I don't know, play 25 lands,
yep.
and then you'll get 500 gold.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or cast 25 green and
green
or
spells,
red spells.
Red spells. Yep. Yeah, yeah, they do it for every color, I think, when you first
That's the great thing about the pre-constructed decks, right? Is like, I'm like, I need green or black spells. Well,
cool.
Pre-constructed deck, play that deck
for, yeah.
until I pass this quest. And then you get gold for like each win up to a certain amount?
Yes.
So I believe like the first 5 wins you get gold, and mm-hmm. then... You can win a certain amount of packs per week, I think.
Yeah, it scales up. Like, I think, like, every 5 wins you get gold, and, like, every, like, 10 or 15 you get a pack. They've been messing with it and changing it.
Yeah, so when you're watching this, it may have changed. So don't quote us on the exact numbers, but the way that that's set up is that you do quests, you play games, you get wins, and you win gold and packs. And gems are purchased. And gems can be used to enter events or buy packs.
Yeah.
So it sounds more complicated than it is once you're in it. The big innovation, the really sort of thing that nobody else has done, is they have wild cards.
Yeah, wild cards are what we need to talk about.
So wild cards are cards in each rarity level. So common, uncommon, rare, and mythic. Sometimes when you open a pack, and I think you can win them in certain events,
mm-hmm.
You'll get like a wild card at a certain rarity level. And that card you can turn in for any card at that rarity level. So if you want Glorybringer... but you haven't happened to open any in your packs or anything, but you're building a deck and it just needs Glorybringer, you can say, oh, I've got a rare wild card. I'm going to cash that in now, and that rare wild card goes away, and now you have a Glorybringer in your collection. And that's it. You can never turn the Glorybringer back into the wild card.
Right.
You've done the one-time swap for it. This is supposed to allow you to construct the decks that you want to rather than being sort of forced to play only what your packs open.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys messed around with your... I'm so scared to use my wild card.
Well, it's because you need to build a deck with it.
Yeah.
I was watching Kenji do the red deck wins version of it, and he was like, all right, well, I got to use this on Hazoret. And, you know, he was able to build a pretty close version of that Ramen Up Ruins deck originally. But it was sucky because it's like, well, if you ever want to build another deck, you got to grind all these wild cards or just hope you get lucky with your packs. And that's why, because there's no trading, you got to use the wild cards.
Mm-hmm.
Have you used any of your wild cards after?
I have. I was terrified at first, but I finally, like, same thing. I was like, I got to build this deck right now. And I really like them. Like, it is scary because you have to hold on to them. But it's really nice that you can trade it one for one because I don't think there's many games that do that right now. Like, you can collect dust and whatever to build to get a card.
You get, like, 25%. So you'd need to get rid of 4 cards of the same rarity to build the one, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So you're
something like that.
And so here you can just trade one to one, and I think that's just... really helpful.
What deck did you build with, or what did you use your wild cards on? What cards?
Carnage Tyrant the Dino
nice.
Deck.
Yeah.
Gotta have that, especially against Blue Black Control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't do anything. Once you cast that, they're like,
Nope,
now what?
So that's the only, is that the only rare wild card you used, or?
And I think, what is it, History of Benalia?
Oh yeah.
I got two
of
those.
Mythic?
Yeah.
Oh, that card. I know. Ridiculous.
I didn't want to do it, but I did. I was like,
Was that for like a specific deck? Is that, because that's not a dinosaur deck.
No, yeah, I was trying out a new brew for the blue white auras.
See, that's, you're brave, and I wish I was like you. And I think in the beta I probably should be, because they're gonna wipe all this. But
right.
That's what I don't like about the wild card, is that like it feels like it discourages brewing. Because
you know exactly, hey, I need X for this.
Mm. Well, it's like, okay, here are my choices. I can build mono red just won the Pro Tour, but red black was like seven of the top eight decks.
Yeah, six or
six. I can build that deck, or I can build this other deck that I think will be good. But if I use my wild cards on one, I can't build the other.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to build the one that I know is good, because that's going to allow me to win more games, which will allow me to collect more gold and win more little quick constructed mini tournaments and things like that. And so I feel like I'm forced to build to be less creative, right? I can't.
Yeah.
I don't have the leniency to try and like brew a deck that I think might be awesome, but I don't know, and so it's just too dangerous. And
maybe if there was a way for you to also convert cards like the 4-1 that wasn't just wild cards to get cards that you wanted, so that gives you at least a little more freedom to build decks. I mean, I can see why they may not want to do that. They probably don't want people to all just get tier one decks immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, have to kind of work for it. But Magic has always been a pay-to-play game. And, you know, in real life, you just go and give a certain amount of money to get a card for a deck.
Right.
You don't need to wait to get a mythic-specific wild card, you know? So it's interesting how they're balancing that here.
Yeah, I do feel like you're punished for using your wild cards a little bit too heavily. And that's going to, I don't know, it's kind of a big deal. I do wish they had some sort of dusting or crafting, some way to turn in your cards. Like, they don't want trading with other players for obvious reason. It creates all these weird real-world money things that they don't want to deal with. But couldn't you have it so I can trade with an AI? Why isn't there a shopkeeper, right? And
I can
go in and they can set the shopkeeper and because
one is called the LGS.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's called Card Kingdom. yeah, but why can't they have something like that? And that way they could even, you know, because one of the things they can't do or deal with in Magic Arena is like some rares are awesome. And
Glorybringer are bad.
Hazoret. And some
terrible.
Mythics are like ones that like nobody ever plays ever.
Not to mention some rares are made for Legacy and Vintage and they just slot them into a standard set. So opening one of those in the standard format is just awful.
Yeah, and it wasn't even made for the game you're playing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Vintage and Legacy are not even available. You know, it's a legendary creature made for Commander and I open it in Arena and Commander isn't even a supported format here. And like, yeah, if I could go to the shopkeeper and be like, hey, can I trade this in for X amount of gold, or I can, you know, I'll make you an offer for those two cards, and they have some sort of algorithm that says, yeah boom, and they could change it like based on like, oh,
actual,
you
know, real. Well, that
History of Benalia is worth.
But can you actually do that? Because Wizards doesn't want to recognize the secondary market. Because you could say like, oh, now all of a sudden your Hazoret
tie it into like,
yeah, it costs more, you know, and it's like great, and then those people are really excited to open the Hazoret, you know.
I mean, the shopkeeper can just work based on rarity, right?
Yeah,
I could do rarity and rotate out again, like different days you have different stuff available for certain periods of time.
Oh, like create, that. Yeah, that's good for them too, right? Like it's not always available, but like, oh yeah, I got to check the shopkeeper every day, or maybe there's
different
a quest.
Shopkeepers, different quests. Oh my gosh,
opens
Wizards
up the whole thing.
We are not for hire. But.
Yeah, I think that's a big downside right now is the wildcard system itself is cool, but the fact that it locks you in and it's so hard to sort of pivot.
Yeah.
That's one of the most fun things about Magic, right, is brewing that deck that you're not sure, but it might be awesome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I want to be encouraged to do that, not punished.
Let's talk about the average cost then.
Okay.
Because on Modo, people like playing Modo because you can build, you know, there's like deck techs for under $1 decks in Commander on Modo.
Well, and the good thing I will say about Modo is they have a trading system.
Yep.
So
yes.
Any deck you buy, you can get most of your money back for it. So anytime you want to build a deck, you can trade your cards in that you've got to a bot. You know, for like,
you get tickets, like one ticket's $1 essentially.
And you get pretty good return. Like, not, it's not 1-to-1, obviously.
But you can do this thing where you just put all the cards in the thing and go to a bot and they'll just like, all right, I'm going to buy half your cards from you, like that. Mm-hmm. And it's really fast and convenient. Maybe you're not, you know, you're not min maxing, getting the max out of every single card price. But it sometimes is like, great, I just got 30 tickets just for all these cards I was literally never going to touch again.
And then you take those tickets, you go to another bot and you go, I'm going to buy all of the cards for this deck. And then. Mm-hmm. Those cards, you have them, and then if you ever want to do them, you do it again. You can sell them and buy the next deck. So when we're comparing prices with MTGO, it's not quite fair, and Paperwork's sort of the same way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right now. So here's what they've said. the average cost to play is that, and right now the only real way to sort of spend money and then get cards is just to buy packs.
Yeah.
You can't buy singles directly. There's no shopkeeper. And they think it takes about 120 packs, give or take, to create a tier one standard deck. So that means using the wild cards from the packs you've opened, which, and so that's it, it. You get about 96 packs for $100. So we're looking at $120.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of standard decks are closer to 300 now. So,
so is that good?
I think it's a much better price, but I don't know if you're going to convince someone that is just getting into it to be like, hey, you want to play this game? It's not like $30. It's not the price of a video game, right? I think that's what a lot of people measure stuff up by. Like, hey, you want to? If you said you can build a deck for the cost of a video game, I'd be like, okay, not bad. But this is twice that.
No. Yeah.
It's over 100, which I think to a lot of new players is really intimidating. And is that something that you think you'd want to do?
I mean, I've been I like to grind out the packs through quests and dailies. Like, the option to have a free but time-consuming way to do it is helpful. I do think, though, as well, like, when you're starting out in a game like that, like, even with Hearthstone, you don't jump in and, like, go for a tier one deck right away.
That's really good. Right. Yeah, that's a really good point.
I think it might be okay, but, yeah, the economy's still in flux right now.
It seems high to me. I mean, I know that's way cheaper than in paper and MTGL, where it's, like you said, it's probably a little more than twice that amount. But, like, you're not competing with those two things. You're competing with Fallout. Mm-hmm. You're competing with, you know.
I also don't want, your cards are going to rotate too, right? I think a lot of people, I mean, in Hearthstone too, right? Same thing happens. But
they do have, doesn't Hearthstone have one, like eternal like format?
Wilds or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a big question that hasn't been answered yet, to my knowledge, at least at the point that we've been recording this, which is what happens at rotation? Because right now,
that's when you really want a shopkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because right now, like, if I'm going to spend $120 on a deck and rotation comes and there's literally no format that I'm now allowed to play some of those cards in, that seems bad. Like, what game out there just suddenly at some point says, oh, sorry, you can't play it anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to mention the feel bads of, like, let's say that the shopkeeper does do some sort of real reflection of prices, and it's like all of a sudden, like, boom.
There's no shopkeeper. I love how they're just like,
no. Let's say that the shopkeeper that does exist. But, like, you know, afterwards, it'd be great if, like, you can trade out the cards that just rotated out, and you can get cards in the current sets, but not the new ones. So, because I know that this is still a business model. You still need to get people to buy packs and get into the new set. So maybe there's a way to redeem the cards that you can no longer use.
Or the shopkeeper is just a very good businessman, and he's not willing to pay full price for things, and so every time you turn it in, you don't get full price, but you get something back.
Something back,
But they, I think no matter what, they have to have some place that I can use my old cards. They have to create a format, because they can't just say...
Just have, like, a goblin workshop, you know? That's what you call it.
Yeah, they can call it...
Just grind the cards out, make something...
I mean, I think they're gonna... My guess is, and I know nothing, right? Like, I know it gets murky because Game Nights is sponsored by Wizards, and we do occasionally have some insider knowledge, but we know nothing about Arena. But my guess is they're going to create a sort of Arena Eternal format, like
they have to.
Like in Hearthstone, right? They almost have to, right?
Yeah, I feel like they have to. Like, you want to be able to play with some of those decks for a while, just like Modern and Legacy. Yeah.
And you just don't want to have your Carnage Tyrant that you turned a wild card into, just literally you're not allowed, the game won't allow you to play it.
That would be awful.
That just doesn't seem right. Like, it seems morally incorrect. They have to give you some place within the game that you're still allowed to. Maybe it's not the premier place. You know, most people are playing over here. But if you want to use your old cards, then you can play. Maybe it's the Arena format. Maybe this is what Frontier was trying to do. And I could see that sort of porting over to paper, too. It's like a new Modern almost. But because of Arena, I could see them going, like, we're going to start. We don't know when the game's launching. Let's say it's, I don't know.
December. Set. Next set.
Let's say it's Guilds of Ravnica.
Guilds of Ravnica. Okay, sure.
Okay. So it starts with Guilds of Ravnica. Depending on how they roll out the game at that point, maybe, you know, the Arena format really only has Dominaria. It starts at Dominaria and just goes forward, basically, because that's what Arena has in it. And that when rotation eventually hits and Dominaria falls off, it can still be played in that Arena format, which means we won't see that for like a year and a half or so. But they have to do something about it.
They have to figure it out. Yeah. One thing that I think is really interesting is that no other card game online has a physical version of it dictating what the best decks are in the online version. Because Hearthstone, I think, like, they get to it eventually, right? But it requires you to grind a lot of cards to build the deck slowly. In the real world, you can test in a much more flexible manner. You can be like, all right, well, let's try taking this one card out for this one out. And it's not like, oh, shoot, I have to grind this card and get this or whatever. And I know a lot of the top players have that option, but in the real world, you have maybe not millions, tens of thousands of people grinding for the best decks and the Pro Tour to show you what's the absolute best at that moment. So I'm interested because I think a lot of people will get to that same feel bad of like, well, you just paid more money so your deck's better. Mm. You know, like you could buy the Pro Tour deck or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, in Hearthstone, I think you have to if you want to be in the top competitive, though. You've got to open a certain amount of packs to have access to the cards to build the top tier decks, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's
no different. But I bet if Hearthstone was a physical card game that people would... It's impossible, by the way.
Yeah.
That people would have figured out even better tuned versions of those decks, right?
You think mm-hmm. so?
Yeah, for sure, because you just have more people playing it. Because Magic has pro teams sitting there grinding it out. You don't have like all these different pro teams across the world grinding out Hearthstone decks.
I see. I'm not that familiar with the Hearthstone thing. Do they not have teams for their big tournaments?
They do, but I don't know if it's as intense as and as in-depth as Magic is able to.
But they can scrape a lot more data in general from everybody else that's playing, right, to find out things that Magic can't do. You only have Magic Online now. They've restricted a lot of that information.
There's also no sideboarding, too, so I don't know if that exists in Magic Arena.
That's a huge
thing. They're going to do that either, yeah. So.
It's interesting to think about. I'm not sure how that affects everything. There was a quote here that was on one of the Wizards of the Coast forums for Arena. This was from somebody at WotC. Because there were some concerns about the cost of sort of building your tier one decks versus like Hearthstone, which I think like $50-$60 on average gets you a tier one deck Hearthstone. The numbers may be slightly off, but it was cheaper.
Good price.
And this is from WotC. It's a direct quote. It says, collection cost. Magic has a lot more depth and diversity than other games. Due to this, it costs more to unlock an entire Magic set. But wild cards let us reduce this cost because we can give out more card rewards. We're more expensive in total, but we also offer a lot more gameplay. This was a very controversial quote that was getting a lot of people riled up online over the last like week or so of Wizards basically saying that they're okay with their game being more expensive. It's kind of like, yeah, we're more expensive, but we're better.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about that?
No comment. I don't know, right? I don't know if you can equate better gameplay to a more expensive game, because you could say two video games cost the same and one is incredibly better, but you're not going to charge more money for it.
Yeah.
I could see that being like World of Warcraft, sure, pay a monthly subscription fee, but I don't think you can justify price based on gameplay that is also, I guess, very subjective. You could have a Hearthstone player come and be like, this game sucks, right?
Right.
Like, what do you mean it's better? I'm going to pay more for this game? No, look at all these things I don't like about it. Mm-hmm. You know, like this is like from a Magic player's perspective. So I don't know.
I mean, it seems like a bad mindset, and I hope they change it. Which is like, hey, it's okay for... Because as much as we were sort of like super happy on the gameplay and like saying like, oh, it's a game changer and like it changes everything, the one way you could mess it up is to sort of put it at a place that's unattainable for a lot of people, right? Yep. Like you undo all that stuff we said earlier about like, hey, it brings new players into the game, mm-hmm. and blah, blah, blah. If all of a sudden it's just expensive and that just like automatically like this amount of people just aren't going to play it.
No, absolutely. Especially in like the digital world, like people's time and attention span can change like that. You want to be able to keep them in and keep them playing. So having a higher bar for that compared to something like Hearthstone or other mobile games.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's right. This doesn't have a mobile version either. It's not easy for people to jump in unless they have a computer necessarily. Yeah, that's a great point about the digital world, because like I know a lot of people that are it just takes one thing for them to be like, nah, I'm good. Mm-hmm.
Too many other options.
Yeah, too many other options. You have a wealth of other options. And I feel like Magic has done this for a very long time, which is bank on the people's nostalgia to be able to keep them in the game and for them to forgive whatever slight they have felt or like anger they have towards something. Be like, well, I love the game, so then it overrides this, which is something that I think has a limited amount of time before that goodwill will just not work, because you'll have so many new players that don't have that prior history of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
One thing I will say is drafts are lining up to be, and this is probably the primary way I'm going to consume Magic Arena.
Me too.
They're lining up to be fairly cheap and quite a bit cheaper than Magic Online and real life. I think somebody did some EVs I saw on Reddit or something, and they were making a lot of assumptions. So these aren't exact, but they're probably close. Is like the average draft will probably cost you like a little under $2 or something like that, which is pretty great. I mean, if you're an average player, right? Just for the average player. So if you're really bad, you probably shouldn't be drafting yet. You should probably... But if you win like half your games or a little over, then... And I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Because you figure, you know, the drafts are fast-ish, but still, like, if you do, you know, I mean, how many drafts are you going to do, like, a week? I'm not a streamer or anything. I'm going to do two, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
That's pretty great for the price. For the That seems like good value as far as, like, entertainment $2.
Mm-hmm. True.
So.
And on top of that, you also get the option to use currency, the gold that you've earned through just playing the game and completing quests to do a draft if you want as well.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. If I'm going to do 2 a week, one of them's probably free, actually, mm-hmm. because yeah. I think you can earn, like, one draft through the gold rewards from the quests and the daily wins and things.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to keep all the cards that you get, so you can be helping to build that tier one deck or a good deck that's going to allow you to also, like, climb the ladder or make your wins faster and make those quests easier. Yeah, that was something I liked about it. Okay, we're going to move into the sort of questions, the future, what we don't know about Magic Arena yet, either things they maybe have talked about or hinted at, or things they haven't, and, you know, I think the shopkeeper would fall under this.
Yeah. Does he sell potions, too? You've seen that video? It's very, very yeah. original.
Because remember, it's still closed beta, and the game yeah. is sort of changing all the time, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to do this episode, is because... You know, we get to get our thoughts out there, hear your thoughts, and, you know, hopefully we know people like Gavin Verhey and things do occasionally listen to our show, and that means any comment you make in the comment section is something that Wizards could hear.
Also, everyone's free to sign up for the closed beta right now.
Yeah.
So you can just go, we'll have the link below as well, so you can just check that out, and, you know, if you're accepted, I mean, I would recommend downloading the program just to play it, just to yeah. be like, wow, yeah. Magic in a new, pretty fun format.
Super fun. Yeah, I'm hoping we can get some beta keys to give out at some point, probably not in this episode, but...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so... You know, Ashlyn, we didn't say, but you've worked in the video game industry for a while here. As a person in that world, are there any things you see that you wish would be done or they'd think about or anything like that?
I think one of the bigger things is definitely being able to play it on mobile, iOS, Android. Just having that accessibility is really, really nice. The shopkeeper, I think, is a really, really great idea. I just picture, like, different bundles and offers that you could be doing just to keep people interested and having a little bit of variety in the game as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do the things Hearthstone does with the shopkeeper, which is, like, you could have different borders on your cards.
Yeah.
Or you could
right.
have, you know, that's things the shopkeeper... They've said they're going to have skins and things like that, so maybe that's a...
Bling out your deck yeah. in a different way.
The mobile, the tablet thing, I think is...
That has to be number one.
They've got
to
do it.
They did it in Unity, right? So that they can bring it over to Mac. And
I would hope so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, if they're not going cross-platform mobile, that, I think, would be the death knell of this entire thing.
It'd almost be like just repeating the mistakes of the past with Magic Online if they yes. didn't do that, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. like, we've been playing Slay the Spire a lot, and I've talked to a lot of friends, and they're like, if they don't make a mobile version of this game, it's not going to succeed.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it makes total sense.
It's 90, so easy, too, because you just...
Yeah, and, like, 90% of people, like, are using their phones for everything now. It's very rare. I mean, on all my YouTube channels, pretty much... The vast majority of people are watching it on mobile. I think Game Nights is one of the few shows, and ours because it's a podcast and you can put it on a computer at work, that people watch more on desktop than anything else. But in general, it's mobile everything every day now for humanity.
Ashlyn, on Twitter, did I see you were playing with like a touchscreen computer?
Yeah.
So
oh,
that's
yeah.
basically like playing it on mobile,
it
right?
was great. Yeah, seriously. My laptop, it's touchscreen. So yeah, just clicking and dragging everything. It interacted perfectly. And
You're just like dragging the cards out, yep. tapping your lands, see?
See?
That's
well,
exactly
great.
Well, we know then it's not hard for them to do it. If you can do it that way already,
yeah,
then it's 100% going to happen.
I'm sure they're just like testing everything out before they launch into the
yeah,
wild,
this
wild
is,
west
yeah,
of mobile.
I think this is more, what they're testing out right now is like the stuff like the shopkeeper. Do we need to do this? How do we do wild cards? How do we really value this game for people?
You know, something else I heard they're testing out, I didn't write it down, but I believe I heard this. Okay. This is where we get in trouble. I think I read this, though, that they were testing like... if you open physical packs of Magic cards,
oh, you might get
like a code. I think they were testing it in New Zealand. New Zealand's where they test all this stuff because it's like a Western country, but it's very small, so you can actually use it as a good analog to yeah. But well, Jimmy, you're gonna find out pretty soon.
Yeah, I'll let you guys know. I'll send you guys an email.
Yeah, but that's another thing like Pokemon does and a lot of other games do, right? What do you think about that? Like, I buy physical Magic cards and I get a code. That gives me digital ones.
That has to be the best thing to do. Because then you're winning on both fronts. People get to have the physical cards. Maybe you'll entrap them. Not entrap. Maybe you'll drag them into the magic world.
Them.
Entice them into the magic world. Maybe you'll stuff them in the cage.
Just over there in a little van. The cards.
Come on in, kid. I got cards for you. No, I think it like encourages what Magic really wants, which is a world that's interconnected and everyone's playing Magic in different ways and choosing the one that fits best for them, you know? But the only other problem I could see is that people, like, there'll be a secondary market for those codes, right? You could just think about all those stores that crack open all these packs and then sell the codes out, you know? That could be something.
Is that a problem, though?
I don't know. I mean, you tell me.
Is it, the question would be like, well, and you've come from the video game world, yeah. So I don't know. Would it be like a thing where they would like cap it or something? You know, I don't know how Pokemon does it.
Honestly, I'm not sure how they do it either. I would honestly see it as more of like doing the like not cards, but like either like special things for the shopkeeper, like special trade-ins you get, special right. like. Skins, codes, and stuff gems. Like that.
So you wouldn't actually get like a pack of cards,
right?
So no, it'd be like ancillary things. Oh, but gems would be sort of cards,
yeah,
because you turn them in. But you get like 25 gems or something. Right. But do you think they would be like you can only put in so many codes per whatever?
I don't know if that would work
out
well.
If you buy a booster box,
yeah,
you get 36 codes,
or maybe they're not in every pack.
Yeah, maybe it's a chance because you know how it's different.
Interesting.
But would they really care if they just said, yeah, if you want to buy 6 cases just yeah, for the digital I mean, codes, like have at it. That's not bad for us either.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess there's another secondary market that would pop up if that happened. But you know, people make money in the Modo stores as
people
well.
People sell the yeah. token cards and the emblem cards, so there's yeah. no isn't really True. Not different than that. Yeah. I wouldn't think. That's an interesting thing. Okay, things we wish they had.
Crafting. I think crafting is important.
Yeah,
just a different way to use your cards other than only waiting for wild cards. Having it all banked on that, it doesn't seem like a smart play.
It just, man, I really don't want to be in a situation where, like, I built this deck and found out that, like, I don't have that much fun playing it, and now I'm just stuck there.
Yeah, you have nothing yeah. to do with those cards.
Just let me turn it into some percentage of a deck that I think I will have fun yeah. with, you know?
One of the things I would really like, it sounds probably a little silly, but when you're building your deck in the deck building mode, they have two different views right now. So you can switch it to like a side view with all the cards you can go through. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the other one that's similar to how Modo normally works, where it's like at the bottom. But I don't think you can separate it by creatures and spells right
oh,
now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And I don't know. It's just something I really like to do when I'm building a deck. I guess they have the thing on the side as well, though, that shows you.
But it's... I'm with you. The one thing that Magic Online, MTGO, does better than Magic Arena is the deck building feels way smoother and easier yeah. mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. Magic MTGO. And I wish they would just take their cues from MTGO because that deck building is intuitive. Yeah. It allows you to lay it out however you want and totally
sort
makes
it
sense.
Really quickly too.
Yeah, I do have trouble in deck building where I'm like, how many creatures do I have? And I have to physically count them mm-hmm. or click on another thing that makes it so I can't see everything else. Mm-hmm. It's that's a good one. They need to... And I think they've said they're going to do this, but peer-to-peer matchmaking so I can play my friends. Well, first of all, they need to have a friends list, which I think they're going yeah. to. I think at one point they accidentally had like a little grayed out area where it was going to be maybe at some point. Anyway.
There's no way that they have a friends list on Modo and they won't have a friends list here. They're probably just slowly implementing, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But hopefully peer-to-peer matchmaking would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you want to be able to set test. Up like, yeah. Yeah. Or you're, yeah, yeah, exactly. That's how you're going to test. And then
yeah.
it's also a way that like, you know, you could set your own parameters with somebody and play for fun where you don't need, you can be outside of the whole like gold and mm-hmm. that whole system. And also if they're going to run tournaments of any kind on it, which I'm assuming they're going to, they have to have it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so.
Hopefully a story mode. I'd like to, yes. I'm sure they're going to do a story mode.
They've
done it with duels. They've done it with every other mobile version of the game before that they had. You know,
how did this, I'm not familiar with how well, the story
mode. Well, the Magic Origins one, you just follow each of the Planeswalkers mm-hmm. through how they got their spark. And you would play different decks based on, you know, if you were a Jace, you would play against Alhamra, was the final boss, essentially, you know. So
you unlock certain cards?
Yeah, you unlock cards along the way, your deck gets a little better, and it's very themed around your Planeswalker, that the story is being told, and then it'll cut to the little animations in between. But at the very least, it, you know, told you the story of yeah. how they all got their spark.
I guess it's like in Hearthstone, how you, like, you go into those dungeons or whatever,
yeah, exactly.
and then at the mm-hmm. end, if you can beat it. And they're actually kind of hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and those are fun.
I like some that. Content they can release, too. That's
and it's also for the casual game. Player, I think, is really important to have stuff like that.
Yeah, especially if you don't want to worry about, like, going out and playing against, like, a tier one deck at any time. You're like, yeah. I just want to play Magic, and you just play that.
Yeah, I want there to be a version that someone can buy and never have to be competitive whatsoever and still have, like, you know, a nice 20-hour experience that they enjoyed a bit and now know how to play Magic, too.
Yep. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Because even if you get a Magic player at the end of that and not an Arena player, that's great.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. The formats thing we already talked about, do you guys think that, like, like, I personally don't even care if they ever have Modern, Legacy, Commander.
No.
Do you?
I love Modern.
Uh-huh. I know. I love Modern to watch it. I just don't know if it seems like a monumental task to get yeah. all the cards in the database and to have it work. And then how do you grind those packs? You're not cracking those packs anytime
yeah.
soon. You have to only buy standard packs to get wild cards for Modern cards.
Ooh. I mean, would they just release, like, Future Sight as, like, a set? Just like they'd release Dominaria or something, right?
I mean,
they
yeah.
could do it. All those cards are... They exist. They don't have
yeah,
to redesign
only, like,
anything.
Yeah, but only five of them are played in, you know, in Modern. So it's just, I don't know. I feel like you would, It'd be weird, but maybe.
The shopkeeper could do it, I guess. Yeah, just have the key cards.
Shopkeeper. Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
Many options with that shopkeeper.
I know.
So here's a big question, and I don't think anybody really knows the answer long term, but what happens to Magic Online, right? Because even I have some amount of resources tied into it. Mm-hmm. Do you have any, like, tickets and cards and stuff, right?
Yeah, I have Tron built on there, several different Tron decks.
So what do you think happens long term to Magic Online? Does it still exist peripherally, or it feels like Arena is going to eventually kill it, right?
I personally think it's going to kill it.
Eventually.
How fast do you think that happens?
I don't know. I mean, because there still is like Legacy and Modern Commander mm-hmm. on that. But I personally have found myself drifting more towards playing Arena just because it's, again, barrier to entry. It's free to do. I can, mm-hmm. don't have to worry about tickets or anything. So I feel like it will probably be a pretty steep drop after it goes live.
Right away?
Yeah.
What are you planning to do in preparation for that? Are you going to keep your Modern Tron? I guess you would because you can't play Modern on Arena.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
I honestly haven't thought about it.
I think it's going to stick around for quite a bit because the upkeep is going to be much easier once they... I think at a certain point, they'll stop introducing standard sets to it. And then they'll maybe put the card pools in, but they won't have to worry about... I don't know.
They'll just kind of stop supporting it, you think, at certain point?
Supporting it, but they'll do it in a way that keeps Modern, Legacy, Vintage alive for those events that people want to do it. But even at a certain point, I'm sure that they have to eventually just see, okay, is this making us enough money to pay the employees that it takes to upkeep it? And once it stops being that way... They'll find a way to either get people out, reimburse them somehow. I'm not sure how, but I think that's years down the line, though. Mm.
My big worry is they're going to make decisions for Arena based on the fact that they don't want it to impact Magic Online, and that's going to be detrimental to Arena long term, right? So
yeah, hopefully that's what CEO I don't want them to no do. To that.
Yeah, I hope they're like, listen, Magic Online can limp along for as long as it's relevant, but we're not going to make decisions with Arena that are because we're worried it's going to affect the other because. We need one really good product mm-hmm. rather than two.
Okay.
Or one that's good and one that's okay. We need a great one, you know?
Yeah.
And if that happens to cannibalize the mediocre one, you know, even though that, see, I'm worried because it's a moneymaker for them still, even though it's not like the biggest digital game out there. It's still, mm-hmm. yeah. That's something that we're going to have to wait and see on. Okay. That's going to be our discussion on Magic the Gathering Arena. It is pretty exciting. And if you haven't applied to get into the closed beta, you really should, and they're letting people in all the time.
Try it out. It's fun.
I think people think like, oh, I'm just never gonna get picked, but honestly, like Terry, our editor, he just applied. Like we didn't get a bunch of codes from Wizards. Jimmy and I got one, and that's kind of it. And Terry just got in like before I even got my code from Wizards. Like, it wasn't that hard.
Yeah,
so I would encourage you to apply and try it out, and I think it's gonna be a really good tool to get your buddies and your friends, you know, people that
intro some of the Magic within.
Yeah.
Just see what happens.
We all have people in our life that are like, they know that Magic exists.
Mm-hmm.
And they might even ask you a question about it or be like, oh yeah, I've seen people playing that. Mm-hmm. And that's their knowledge. And until now, it's been very hard to reel them in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll be a lot easier now. Oh, you know what? You should just download this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. To the listeners, if you play Magic the MTG Arena, let us know what you think of it, if you tried it out, or if you're ready to play some more, or if you want to even see more content about it in the future. We may, you know, there's a very strong possibility that I will be streaming it on Facebook. Josh and I both might be streaming it from the Command Zone account as well. So if you guys are interested in that kind of content, I know we had the Twitch live stream a long time ago for episode 100. But if you guys want to see us stream this game, or if you want to have thoughts about it, you know, make sure you let us know in the comments.
And Ashlyn, you stream it, right?
Yeah, and Ashlyn streams it. Ashlyn, where can people find you for that stream?
Twitch.tv/Ashlyn_Rose.
Ashlyn Rose. Cool. And we'll have all those links, of course, in the more info
box. You also
box
do
below.
Like a lot of pack openings and stuff too, right?
Yes.
And crack boxes.
Tuned in for you cracking a box or two.
That is like probably my favorite part of the stream, honestly, is like cracking open an entire
is
box
that
of Magic.
Because it gives you an excuse to rationalize what you're doing?
Probably.
Because I want to crack all the boxes, but I feel bad. So if I was doing it for entertainment purposes,
yeah.
I used to do those unboxing videos, and I was like, this is sweet.
Yeah,
I
just do it for fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you want to crack open boxes, then what you can do is go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone and use that affiliate link when you buy your booster boxes, your Magic singles, your other products like Ultra Pro, dice, sleeves, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You really are supporting this podcast and Game Nights. We super appreciate all the support you guys show us, and people are constantly tweeting at us their Card Kingdom orders and what decks they're building. It's fun to be like, oh, you just got a guy's Cradle. That's going to be sweet. So thanks for sharing, and thanks for supporting us.
Yep, and of course, like Josh said, Ultra Pro products available at cardkingdom.com/commandzone and your LGS, and a lot of big box retailers as well, so pick up some of that product if you get the chance. Okay. Moving on to the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. Jimmy Wong is up to bat, and Jimmy Wong has an announcement, and Jimmy Wong will stop speaking in the third person now. I am going out of town for a undetermined amount of time, but it will be a significant amount of time.
And by out of town, we mean out of the country.
Yeah, I will be flying to New Zealand very, very soon. Probably, definitely by the time that this podcast airs. Maybe even by the time the last week's podcast airs as well. That's why I won't be at GP.
That's why we're
Vegas.
Doing two at once.
Yes, and trying to film as much as possible. There may be a couple times when I come back in this process, but right now, conservatively, if I had to be very, very conservative about it, I would say I'm going to be leaving from the middle of June, which is after this podcast is out, potentially all the way through November, maybe even December.
Wow.
So
maybe the rest of this year. Now, we're hoping Jimmy will be able to sort of like remotely call in from time to time, but definitely our podcasting, our normal structure is going to change. We're going to have some substitute guests come in. We've got some lined up to fill in the gap, and we're unsure right now exactly what that'll mean for game nights. Hopefully Jimmy will be able to come back and still maybe not miss a beat, but there might be a game nights or two that he can't make it to.
It's okay. I wouldn't have drawn lands in this. So... you know, maybe it's better for me to miss it. You know? Honestly, it could be better for my mental state. Yeah, I mean, I'll have the internet. I'll be in a Western country, New Zealand, with internet. There's a lot of internet there, and, you know, the internet works in the other parts of the world. So there will be times where I think I'll be able to Skype in. I'm definitely going to be trying to play Magic out there. If you guys know any places around Auckland, that would be good. I believe I'll be there for the most part. Which
any Kiwis out there, get in contact with Jimmy because
please do.
He's going to need a playgroup.
Yes. For whatever free time I have. So I will be gone for a while. It doesn't mean I'm gone from the show entirely, but you guys will be seeing a lot more guests coming up, as well as just, I don't know, hopefully some cool new topics and some new, you know, we'll be expanding in a different way. We'll have some old friends, old and new, on the
show.
Yeah,
we've definitely got some people lined up. Craig will definitely be on the show a little bit more, and we've got another person that's going to sub in for an extended amount of time. We'll be cagey about it for now, but you'll find out soon enough.
Very soon.
All right. That wasn't a... I guess it was outside the world of Magic. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah, it's the whole point of it. Literally a different part of the world.
If you want to check out another awesome Magic podcast, you should tune in to our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex Kessler, who was on the last episode, previous episode of Command Zone, and Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format and all things competitive Magic. You can find them right next to us at collected.company or on Twitter at the MMcast.
And the editor for the show is Craig Blanchett. Watch the YouTube video versions at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. Big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer at Living Cards MTG on Twitter for making the background animations as well as the intro and end animations for the show. And Ashlyn, where can people find you on the internet outside of twitch.tv/Ashlyn_Rose?
Twitter at Ashlyn Rose and facebook.com/miss.ashlynrose.
Perfect.
Ashlyn, are there any other events coming up that you're going to be cosplaying at?
Yes, I will be. I've already been to GP Vegas.
Right, that already happened.
After that, I will be at GP Singapore.
Ooh,
so I'm very excited.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
I know. I already told her that it has the best food in the world. So
best I'm eat food so in much the food. World.
Go to Banana Leaf Apollo.
Okay.
In Little India, it's literally, I think, the best meal I've ever had in my life.
Is that what Shivam recommended you?
Shivam recommended me, and he told me that his dad, who's like from India, I think, considers it the best Indian restaurant in the world.
Wow. Okay, then.
And I was like, holy I was moly. Like, Shivam would never say that.
Yeah, right.
So I, you know, I so gotta of go. Course I went, and I was like, yeah, it's probably the best meal I've ever had.
Jeez.
Yeah. Well, it's perfect. Not fancy. It's like real Indian food. They don't give you silverware either. You eat it with your hands.
Amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I'll be at Singapore, and I'll also be at GP Richmond.
Oh, sweet. When is Richmond? That's...
I want to say, like, end of the year.
Okay, cool.
Very cool.
So everybody gets to check out that Bloodbraid Elf. Yeah. How many outfits do you usually at a single GP? Is it two or three?
Usually three.
Wow.
Oh,
so
wow.
So every day you're in a different one?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's
That's amazing.
Yeah, but I did back-to-back for SCG Con and GP Vegas, so I had to bring 5 costumes with me. And it's 2 giant suitcases that is nothing but costumes.
Oh, wow. Now, is Admiral Beckett Brass still in the rotation?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Always.
And I finished that hat.
It's so good. I also have the sword now, too.
Ooh,
so.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
Now you just got to find a bunch of pirates to help you out.
Right? Will I be seeing that at Vegas? Have I already seen that at Vegas?
Yes, you have.
Oh, sweet. It was awesome.
I think you took a picture with me in it. Okay.
You guys better take a picture.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Do you follow automotive news, or do you just like cars and want to see what the heck's going on? Well, then you might like Donut Media's new podcast, The Big Three. Hi, I'm James Pumphrey, and every week, me and my co-host / two of my top 5 friends, Nolan Sykes and Joe Weber, unpack the latest and greatest in automotive news and trends on The Big Three. You'll also get a lot of laughs, hot takes, and personal insight on cars from the biggest car guys in automotive media. So, whether you're a hardcore enthusiast or just a person who goes, that's a good looking car, check out The Big Three, available wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch the full videos at Donut Podcasts on YouTube.